Hello and welcome to this week's French Football Weekly podcast. My name is Chris. I am your host, and I have to say I cannot compete with a certain Monsieur Gastien's knitwear. If anybody saw that on Saturday night, they'll know exactly what I mean. But I can invite two guests onto the podcast with me this week, and they are Jez and Phil. Good evening to you both.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello. Did either of you see the very fetching cardigan that Gastien was sporting on Sunday? It's very Saturday. It's very.
Oh, no, and I'm a big fan of a cardigan, so
I thought
I want
of you
to share this.
I'll try and find a picture of it for you. I did think of you when I saw it. I thought that's a very natty wear. Anyway, that segues us rather perfectly, doesn't it, into PSG? We're going to kind of take a look at the European.
Hang on, Chris.
Go on.
Cardigans segue nicely into PSG.
Well, more the game that PSG played against the cardigan wearing opposition. It's the most tenuous link ever, but go with it, okay?
PSG were wearing a cardigan and sitting down and just going, oh, this won't be a problem. We've got Barcelona later. Let's not bother trying.
Well, it's funny you should say cardigans. I think if anyone had, maybe not a cardigan, but certainly had his slippers on, the face that Achraf Hakimi gave when he was told to get warmed up, when he'd blatantly been told he wasn't going to be used unless there was an injury, which there turned out there was to Mukiele, he was the most unprepared substitute I think I've ever seen. But
I just have, on the cardigan and slippers front, I have now reached the time of my life where I do tend to fall asleep on the sofa.
Haven't we all?
While watching something. And I watched the beginning of this game and nodded off and woke up because I was being poked in the face by a cat and was like, Clermont have done what?
Yes, well, let's dive in.
If we're looking for connections, I suggest that the speed that Skriniar thought and moved for Clermont's goal, he looked like he should be sitting at home in a cardigan.
I don't know what's happened to him, because at Inter he was
nothing.
So good.
He's always like that.
He's quite decent at Inter, but I guess
yeah, as long as he doesn't have to turn or move.
Yeah, true. It's Harry Maguire.
This is the thing that the Barcelona massive on my Twitter feed were kind of talking about ahead of the game on Wednesday. Now we've got Mukiele out with a head injury. And Hakimi, I think, is suspended for this game. So right back's going to be a problem. So they probably have to play Marquinhos there. And Marquinhos, if you saw him at the end of the Clermont match, and particularly in his post-match interview, very, very emotional and clearly doesn't want to leave. And so then a centre-back situation, if he has to play at right-back, and Skriniar was trending after the Clermont match and not for good reasons, and Kimpembe is injured, so I'm guessing Danilo's going to have to start back there. It's problematic in ways that go beyond even the whole remontada thing. Makes it problematic.
Let's not even go there. Every time I look at the injury situation with PSG, they're on the app of choice that I use. Other apps for football are available, but I use Flash Score, and they always put Presnel Kimpembe as listed as, quote, convalescing, which I always think is quite deep. Obviously, he technically is from long-term injury, but the suspicion is Carlos Soler might play right back, which he's done in the league a few times this season in this game. But yeah, you're right, Marquinhos sort of coming back into the team at the time of the game, or in time for the Barcelona game, which comes up tomorrow. Jez, what did you make of their draw with Clermont? Because in the grand scheme of things, it probably doesn't mean a huge amount to Clermont, but they took their chance. And as you say, Keita took advantage of a Skriniar mishap, I think is what we're going to call it, and stole in to put Clermont in front. They had other chances on the break. PSG were, I mean, that they played like a side that has a big European game on the horizon and has already basically wrapped up the league. But there was a few worrying signs, I thought, just how easily Clermont were penetrating them. This is a side that is bottom of the table and struggled to win all season. So any alarming signs ahead of Barcelona for you in this, or is it just a case of we made 11 changes, who really cares?
I don't think there's too much to be read out of this particular match. I think, as you both sort of alluded to, there's no doubt at all that PSG were not really interested in this match at all. The good professionals that we know they are, they're probably a little bit annoyed that they had to put in half an effort to make sure they didn't lose. And to be fair to them, they maintained a good long unbeaten run. But yeah, I mean, the back five, if you include the keeper, is very much not at all their starting back five. Well, the starting 11 basically was not even close to their starting 11, and even players like Asensio are kind of playing out of position. So I don't really think there's much to be read into the match itself. But on the basis that Skriniar, if he's fully fit, probably would be a starting. Potentially would be a starting centre back. The cons my concern is what it's been all season, that yes, they're a much more sort of cohesive team than they have been in the past. You've taken away a couple of obviously stellar attackers, but I think what you lose in that, you've more than gained in terms of team ethic. And I still think they probably will get to the final because they've got an extremely favourable draw. But I still think that defence is nowhere near at its best. And you can't always rely on Donnarumma, who I know I've criticised a lot, but he has been in very good form recently. But you can't just rely on him to put out 8, 10 saves a match. So the only sort of thing that I would take out of the Clermont match as a sort of a bit of a alarm or whatever is Skriniar. I don't think there's too much to be read into it. I think it's more, look, it's the vagaries of the calendar and Clermont. Probably that point won't make much difference at the end of the season. And no team, any team that's in trouble, you can say, well, that's their fault across the whole season, not because of one match. But it's always a little bit distasteful when a team clearly throws a match, and PSG have done it before against, I can't remember if it was Caen, Troyes, I think tw twice the last match of the season there was a sort of anomalous result there that maybe helped Caen out, something like that from memory.
Yeah, it does ring a bell.
They're entitled to rest their players, they've earned the right to do that, but I'm surprised a little bit more fuss wasn't made. And if they happen to have been playing a Lorient or a Nantes or a team where every point could well make a big difference, I think there'd have been more fuss made.
Yeah,
I
I think
think
that's
it's not, well, PSG are still 10 points clear at the top of the table. So dropping points here is not, in that sense, important. But drawing to the Lanterne Rouge is a bit of a embarrassment, frankly. And what you don't want when you're about to step up against your old rivals is bad feeling. And I mentioned Marquinhos looking very emotional at the end of the game. He equaled the record for PSG appearances. I think it was 435. He's been there 11 years,
Yeah,
which I
seen it all.
hadn't fully realised. But his post-match interview was very interesting in that he was saying, "I want the fans to know, the team to know, the manager to know, and the president to know that I want to continue my career with PSG because I think we're all looking at that as a possible transfer in the summer." And that to have that kind of player, that kind of leader, that important player in tears at the end of the game when he was being saluted by the ultras, to then come out and say that's it's like, I don't want to go, you'll have to kick me out, is a very, very interesting thing. He did also stress, I'm only 29. And
If I
so
was, sorry, go on.
no, I just think that was possibly saying to other clubs,
Can
still
still
got a
play.
couple of years in me.
You wanted to come in on that, Jess?
I was just going to say, if I was miles past my best, probably one of the best paid footballers in the world and one of the most beautiful cities in the world, I'd also be upset that I might be leaving.
And the fact that he probably has basically earned, well, not earned the right, but I imagine if there's ever a way you can get away with a chill day at a club that you've been there for 11 years, he probably knows how to get a pretty relaxed day here and there, or
He's
do
had
the bare
quite a few
minimum.
of them the last couple of seasons.
Yes, bless him. It does have the ring of a Thiago Silva-esque exit, holding the trophy aloft in May, I would suspect, because certainly PSG in the summer, there's going to be a lot of change. But before we get to the summer, do either of you, before we move on to other clubs in Europe, do either of you expect them to go through past Barcelona? I think you both kind of alluded to the fact you might believe that they will. I certainly do. Any objections?
I just want to mention one other little funny thing that I noticed in the post-match interviews, which was Canalplus didn't really get the right person on comms for this because they interviewed Borges, who is the Clermont captain. He's Brazilian, and Gonçalo Ramos, who is Portuguese, and clearly nobody there could speak Portuguese. So they were both interviewed in English, which was then translated, which included the absolutely wonderful question from the pitch side interviewer to Ramos, "You goal much this season?" To which he looked slightly confused and said,
As you would.
"Yes, I have scored quite a lot of goals, and that's good." It was, and then of course Luis Enrique comes out and he speaks in Spanish, so that was fine, but it did seem like they hadn't fully considered
Their
what they
questions.
might have to do post-match, which was rather awkward.
Who would be a journalist?
I'm not suggesting that Ramos is as bad as Guido Carrillo at Monaco, but I'll be more impressed when he scores a few crucial goals
Yeah,
than
rather than ones
speeding
against.
wins. And I mean, we didn't talk about it last week. I thought his sort of goading of Marseille fans after scoring the second goal in a match that I don't think Marseille were going
Oh,
to be
was
beaten out of
that
anymore
when
was
the
absolutely
stewards had
pathetic.
to run out with kind of riot shields? Yeah, that
It's
wasn't a smart thing to do.
very easy to run around with your arms aloft when you have two goals clear in a game and you're clearly the dominant force, isn't it? So yeah, I tend to agree. But yeah, so we're all in agreement then. PSG make the final over two legs.
I mean, obviously, there's a semi first, and I can't even remember who they play.
Sorry,
Definitely
semi-finals, my bad.
the Dortmund Atletico.
Dortmund Atletico. Yeah, sorry, semis, I should have said. I'm going a
Yeah, I
bit.
think they've avoided probably the four teams that they would fear most on the other side of the draw. So it couldn't have gone any better for them. And Barcelona are a good team. They're in good form in Spain. They've got match winners, but they're not playing at the Nou Camp. They're missing one, if not two, of their starting midfielders. Lewandowski's miles past his best.
Yeah.
They beat Barcelona last time they played them anyway, so the remontada thing is a little bit lazy and tiresome, I think. But I know everyone's trying to paint it as, it is quite close. There's not much between them, and I know it wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world if Barcelona win, but I think it'd be a massive disappointment. Like, for me, PSG are comfortable favourites.
Yeah, well, that echoes my thoughts exactly. Which brings us nicely on to a couple of other teams that met at the weekend that are also in European action. It's heading in seemingly very different ways, those being Lille and Marseille. This was a bit of a strange game, because it wasn't very good in the first half. In fact, it was pretty turgid. And then in the second half, it kind of got a bit better and it all happened. Marseille went behind and stayed behind. Jonathan David put Lille in front. Rémi Cabella, with a rather delicious curling effort, made it two.
Ooh.
Aubameyang got one back before classic Marseille, within 2 minutes, Goodmanson had extended the lead to 3-1, and that was all she wrote.
Wasn't that put down as an own goal for
I think it's one of those that depends which angle you look at or who you support, but we'll give it to him for now. But yeah, I see your point. But yeah, a 3-1 win for Lille. Let's talk about them first, because they won the game. They, of course, have got the tough task of Aston Villa. What we thinking, Phil? I'm slightly on the train here that, as much as Unai Emery has got a brilliant record in European competition, I've been here before at this stage of the season when Unai Emery teams, one of which I support, happen to go off the boil, and often get worked out. And Aston Villa's form, if you look at what happened to them at the weekend, for example, 2-0 up, probably should have been 5 up against Brentford and ended up narrowly scraping a point. They're not exactly in the best nick at the moment, whereas I feel like Lille, especially with a coach like Fonseca, I feel like, I'm not saying they're favourites, but I kind of back them over two legs, and I think Villa are getting a bit of an easy pass as favourites. Are you feeling the same way?
Yes, I think we've talked about this a lot, that everyone seems to think that Villa are going to win the Europa Conference thing. Watch it. And I've been going, but Lille
Hmm.
are in there. And so obviously losing to Manchester City is not that problematic. But drawing with Brentford possibly is. So I want Lille to do well here, and I really think they will, because they're in a really good place. They're in a good run of form, and they have game-changing players. Jonathan David is just doing all sorts of stuff right now.
Just in time for the summer window.
Yeah, possibly. But being the second highest scorer in Ligue 1 with 16 in 28 games is good.
Yeah, is it full?
And I think if Villa go into this thinking, ah, this is ours for the taking, they're going to get a bit fucked up, frankly.
Bit of a shock.
So yes,
Yeah.
it will be a very interesting match. Being at Villa Park in the first leg, I think, could be looking at Villa winning, but I'd still bet on Lille to score.
Yeah, me too.
And then if they take him back to Lille with just a one goal margin, oof,
And without this away goals rule, I think people are focusing on this who's at home tie thing a bit too much. Like, we're getting it quite a lot of.
I'm thinking more about the atmosphere in both senses, in both legs.
I back Lille to score it in Birmingham on Thursday, and I feel like that could be really important, particularly if they, I think basically if they come away within one goal of Villa, I would back them to potentially win in France. That's kind of And so maybe that's just the romantic in me and the slight, ever so slight bias. But that's how I see it. Are you in the same camp, Joe, before we have a little look at Marseille and their chances with Lille? Are you slightly more concerned? Are we going a bit ahead of ourselves here?
I mean, I wouldn't go so far as saying concerned, but I mean, Villa for me is still not as comfortable favourites as I think PSG are against Barcelona. But I think it's a Premier League team with, the wealth and the depth and all of that that they've got with a coach who I know you've obviously got issues with, but is a past master in Europe. I think Villa are comfortable favourites. I wouldn't say, again, I wouldn't say it's a shock if Lille go through, but I think it would be a bit of an upset. And I think, alluded to the remontada and how that's not an issue. I think French teams have got a chip on their shoulder against most countries, but particularly against English teams. I think there's such an inferiority complex that I think more often not than not, they sort of start the match already expecting to lose. So, although on paper and on recent form, I think Lille have got very not nothing to fear, but can certainly, there's no reason for them not to think that they can get through. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up somehow beating themselves.
Yeah, maybe
And
there is some.
Chevalier, the Lille goalkeeper, was very good
Yeah, he
against
was.
OM. And I think that with a fairly settled back four in front of him is going to be interesting. And when you look at that front three, Cabela Zegrova, who of course has scored a lot of goals, and David, who is second in the scoring charts. This looks like one that's going to be one in midfield. And not quite sure how that will work out, but Lille will be no pushovers, certainly.
I'm definitely expecting a big match from Zagrova. I think Jonathan David, I don't understand how why he's still at Lille. But yeah, this is a again a chance for him to put himself in the window.
They don't get the
Cabela
offers.
obviously is probably past that now. By the way, Cabela definitely not the biggest prick to celebrate against scoring against his old club this weekend. But I think Zagrova, he's someone very much on the up, and I would think is thinking this is a great chance for a big Premier League move in the summer.
I think I said before, but I really like him. I just think
Me too.
he's got everything, as you say. It's almost like the anti-Mudrick, in terms of that he needs to find the right club, but I think he can go, a higher club. I think he's probably above the mid-table range if he carries on at this sort of trajectory. But yeah, I really like his directness. And I should stress, just in case Unai Emery's listening, I was one of the few people that defended him to the hilt while he was at Arsenal, but towards the end it did go really downhill very quickly. And just looking at Villa's form recently and some of their fans, I think some of them may be just seeing a bit of what I saw, but we shall see. What about Marseille, Jez? Because the honeymoon is. But if Adam's listening, by the way, he owes me a fiver, because he used that line. The honeymoon period is over for Gasset, or it seems to be anyway. They were not good on Sunday. They haven't really been very good for a few weeks, to be fair, and have got some decent results through adversity. But where are we with them in the ever-changing world of Marseille? Do you back them in Europe? Is that why they're taking their eye off the ball in the league? Is all the eggs are in this one basket? And Benfica, although not the Benfica we know of old, once again, that's not a gimme, is it?
It's not, but I said that a few times this season, I feel like Marseille have raised their game for Europe. They've lost their last four matches, but to be fair, that's away to Villarreal in a match that they sort of already had won, away to Rennes before their form plummeted, against PSG, and then away to Lille. So that's not an easy run of fixtures. So, I don't think we should sort of completely sort of throw the team to the dogs yet. But everything we've been saying all year, it's not a great Marseille team. I think they've done very well to get this far in Europe. And again, it's certainly not a gimme, but it's a nice draw for them, and I think a winnable tie. But it needs to be the decent Marseille that turns up. It needs to be the home to Villarreal, and very much not the away to Villarreal that turns up. But I think it's a bit harsh to read too much into the last couple of league matches. As we discussed last week, against PSG, on the balance of play and a couple of controversial refereeing decisions, I'm not 100%. I think 2-0 probably was quite flattering to, arguably a win was flattering to PSG.
Yeah, that's the looming shadow of Angel Di Maria will be an interesting one, particularly at the Velodrome, one suspects. So I would imagine he'll get a fairly hostile reception. But yeah, Benfica, they lost the game with Sporting, didn't they, the weekend, the big game. I think that was essentially who was going to win the Portuguese league. So one suspects their focus will be on this tournament as much as Marseille will from their side of things. But we shall
It's a
see.
tough tournament. Neither of them are going to win it, so.
No, I agree. I totally agree. There's some really, what's it, Roma, AC Milan,
Liverpool,
Liverpool.
Atalanta, Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah, few decent sides in there. Was it Leverkusen are unbeaten in like 40 games now? So ridiculous. Absolutely crazy.
I don't think they've lost all seasons.
They haven't, you're right. They are going invincible. I think they can win their league this weekend. First of the big five. Anywho. Let's come back to matters domestic then. Phil, I just wanted to touch briefly on Monaco Rennes because you like a red card, don't you? And there was two in this game. And there's kind of two things I wanted to mention in this game. First of all, the game itself. So Martin Terrier rather surprisingly saw red for Rennes, and Tilo Kehrer rather unsurprisingly sent off for a second bookable in the same sort in the same game, two bookings, and he went off as well. The winning goal came from Akiyush, who's got, I think, a really big future ahead of him. He looks the part. And that win for Monaco just sees them kind of just that little bit extra daylight between them and Lille. Of course, Lille winning as well, but it still remains 3 points. We'll come on to Brest in a minute. But is this a sign that what Jez has said most of the season, I think I've touched on it as well, that Rennes are underperforming because they sit ninth now, two defeats on the spin, and they didn't look particularly good in this game, if I'm honest, or certainly what I saw anyway.
And also lost the second of the Coupe de France semi-finals to PSG over the last midweek. But Kylian Mbappe seeing a penalty saved, but then a couple of minutes later scoring the goal that won it. So Rennes, kind of confusing to me in it because, as you say, they're ninth. They are kind of inconsistent, and that means they are where they are. And so, playing Monaco, who obviously are third, who in themselves haven't looked particularly convincing in many games, but have still got a really good record. Are they Manchester United?
They're not that bad. They're not that bad. Come on.
No, because they do actually look organised at the back. But yeah, this was a game where you would have put Rennes as the underdogs, but they kind of underdogged it badly,
Didn't
if you see
play. I
what I
thought
mean.
like Monaco scored and just nothing happened. Like, okay, losing Terrier is not going to help that because she remained attacking threat, but it just didn't seem to offer much at all. And Monaco kind of just sat there and went, well, we've scored. Like, what have you got? They didn't really go through any major attacks in the game. They had a couple of chances, but they weren't anything clear cut. So just thought it was a bit of a weird one. I don't want to dwell on this too long, but I just wanted to mention it quickly, Jez, that you thank you for filling me in on the week. There was a refereeing controversy, I don't know if you call it that, but in the Coupe de France game, Stephanie Frappart gave a penalty that I think you were saying you've seen that maybe was a little bit off in the Lyon Coupe de France game, and got a 1 out of 10 in L'Équipe, which drew, certainly from the English commentary of this Monaco game, drew quite a lot of ire, saying it wasn't a good representation of the league to be giving officials ratings full stop, and especially, not in light of adversity. A 1 out of 10 is particularly harsh, even by L'Équipe standards. In
I
this
th
particular,
I think they call that exequable.
and you're going to have to fill me in on the English translation of that, but I imagine it's not
It's
very
the
good.
same word. It's
Okay.
not good.
Not good. Poor. But in this game, the VAR drew the attention to a suspected foul by, I think it was Singo on Désiré Doué, who blatantly dives. He's pulling the shirt of Singo, who pulls him down. And then as Singo is pulled to the ground, his foot catches Doué. In fact, it doesn't really even catch him. He goes to ground. It's a blatant dive. The VAR calls Frappart over, and she quite rightly dismisses the penalty call. The question I would have to you, Jez, is does it open a bit of a dangerous door, the fact that that was not mentioned after this game, in the fact that they highlighted the obvious mistake by the referee in the previous game, but then when this situation comes up, the VAR gets away scot-free? Because we've seen VAR used pretty well in France, I think, this season. But does this open a bit of a trap door, or am I just reading
You'll
into it
have
too
to
much?
explain to me what VAR did wrong.
So the decision, the on-field decision was, Frappart waved it away and said no case to answer. And in real time, it looked very clearly a dive. And then the game went on for about 1 minute and 30 seconds when the VAR asked her to review the decision again, and nothing was, and she, because you see it, I think, in England, where they're called to the screen, and you immediately think they're going to give it, because they wouldn't have called her over if there wasn't a case to answer. But in this case, it was so clearly a dive that the VAR was just, there was nothing mentioned of it at all. So it's fallen on the official again. I guess that's my point.
I mean, my issue is less with VAR. My issue is much more that, look at, for example, Ben White at the weekend, that there's players that are just blatant cheats. And the referee's job is quite difficult anyway. I think until the players themselves receive much harsher punishments for, frankly, trying to cheat. I mean, Thierry Henry's handball is an extreme example, but he just did what players do hundreds of times a match. It just happened to be higher profile, bigger stakes, whatever. If players know that there's no real issue, there's no downside. The upside is they might, get a player sent, get an opponent sent off or win a penalty or something. The downside is they get, finger wagged at them, but no kind of ban or anything, then they'll keep doing it. So my issue isn't with VAR, it's with the players themselves and the system, which means that they all get away with that kind of thing. If someone dived and it was a blatant dive, then booking at the very least, I think.
That was the other thing that I thought was a bit strange, that he wasn't booked in retrospect, because to me it just was. And I like Doué, I think he's a really talented young player, but he throws himself to the floor in an attempt to get a penalty, and it's to me it's very obvious. I'd be interested to see what other people think, if they've seen it or if you get a chance to see it. But yeah, I just thought it was a really weird set of circumstances.
Also, I don't, I mean, typically the only time that I can think of in the UK of a referee being called back to have a look at VAR and then not changing his decision was when Brighton should have had a penalty against Brentford the other day. But I don't see why. I don't think a referee being called to look at VAR should automatically mean that they're likely to change their decision.
No, I agree.
Um, I think it's reasonable for it to be, look, this isn't really clear cut. You had a split second while the game was still going on to make the call. We're helping you out here by giving you a chance to have a look at it again. I just think, even with VAR, it's so fraught because for the referee, because, having to change their decision is still kind of potentially a little bit embarrassing. Then temptation to sort of stick with your decision if it's not a entirely clear cut, are you being sort of influenced a little bit by the fact that you don't want to sort of publicly sort of undermine yourself?
I kind of think of it the other way around, that if you're a ref and you make a call and you're called over, and then you get to see 37 different angles all slowed down, it's actually easier to say, oh,
Yeah.
yeah, I didn't see that. Sorry. I think, without wishing to put my feminist hat on too much, that Stephanie Frappard possibly takes more shit than some of the other referees in the
100% agree with that. I don't believe any other referee would have been given a one.
No, and she manages it really well as well. I think every game I've seen her, I think she manages the situation really well in
I
terms of
mean,
players.
that Leon game, it was bad, but it wasn't that bad.
Well, there was one incident as well in this game, where, so obviously after this decision, the Wren players were a little heated, shall we say, because they believed that Douay was fouled, and say, they didn't see the replay. Arthur Théat, the Belgian defender, literally got in Frappard's face and screamed at her, what you would class as aggressive behaviour. She did not mess about, straight away yell at her. I mean, to me, you could easily have given him a red. I mean, he was right in her face, just screamed at her, and then when he realised what he was doing, he kind of trotted away as she booked him. But I do, again, I do wonder if that is, like Jez says, it's the players. And the only thing I want to just mention before we move on, because I know VAR is one of those that can run and run. There was two, you mentioning the angles there, Phil, and how everything is slowed down. We've seen plenty of incidents in Ligue 1 this season. There was two at the weekend in the Premier League. Jez won't thank me for this, but the Lamptey one and the Liverpool one. Particularly the Liverpool one, you go back and watch that in real time. As stupid as the challenge from Wan-Bissaka is, it's not a penalty. He doesn't touch Harvey Elliott at all in any way, shape, or form. But the player leaves his leg and throws himself to the floor and gets a penalty. And we've seen quite a few of those in Ligue 1 this season as well. And I think, as you said there, Phil, if you're going to see it from 47 different angles, I think the only way that these sort of situations are going to work for referees is if they are, how do I put this? Is if they're not correcting an official's decision, but like Jez says, they're invited to re-review the situation. And exactly what you both said there, they shouldn't be, oh, we're sending you to the screen to tell you off because you made a mistake. It should be, we're going to invite you to have another look and you can make your own decision. There shouldn't be pressure to change that viewpoint. So, yeah,
But
but
also, wasn't there a match last week where Man United got two dodgy penalties, or was it Liverpool?
the Chelsea game, the Chelsea Man United game,
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
there was a couple of, yeah. I mean, I thought the second one, the Dalot one on Madueke, I thought that was, I just don't think there's any reason for Madueke to go down there if he's not fouled. I can't remember the other one, to be honest with you. I really
I just
can't.
think, there are genuine situations where you can't tell, or not that you can't tell, but people genuinely, with the best will in the world, completely neutrally, have different views as to whether it was or wasn't a foul or a penalty or whatever.
And we.
I'd quite like them to have to just make a subtle change, which they have, like in rugby league, definitely, possibly rugby union, which is kind of, I'm going to give a penalty unless you give me a compelling reason not to, sort of thing. Or, in rugby, it's I'm going to give a try unless you have clear evidence I shouldn't, or I'm not going to give a try unless you have clear evidence. So I think that would be a good sort of subtle change to make. But
Yeah.
the bottom line is that a lot of it is still subjective. And I don't care if I'm accused of being a conspiracy theorist or not, the big teams still seem to get a hell of a lot more decisions in their favour.
Yeah. And televised games, I think I'd throw into that as well. There are more decisions given in televised games, I think, where it's audience dependent almost, which I'll throw my sinful hat in there. And the final thing I'd say on this is, it'd be really nice if the players actually understood what the laws of the game are as well. Gary O'Neill, I'm looking at
It
you, for
would be
example.
nice if the managers
Yeah, I was going
understood.
to say not managers, I said players there, but yeah, managers. Yeah. This whole, well,
There
if
was
you.
a big thing weekend about whether somebody offside was interfering with play.
That was the
And it
Wolves thing, yeah.
just reminded me of that Veretout disallowed goal in Le Classique, when Enrique was standing right next to Donnarumma.
Didn't we have one in the Classic this past 2 weeks ago? Oh, is that the one you're referring
No,
to?
the
Sorry,
one
that
I'm
is the rule.
talking about.
Sorry, yeah.
It's like
Sorry, my
the
brain went
only way he
walkies.
could dive would be right if
Yeah.
Enrique had just hit the deck or dived sideways, then the near post would have been
Yeah.
open. So I think that was completely correct
Yeah.
to disallow because he was in the fucking way.
See, that's what I mean. Like, I'm not convinced. Although I don't know if I'm partly saying that from the point of view of a neutral who wanted it to be 1-1 to make the rest of the
Better
match more
game.
interesting, if you know what I
Yeah.
mean.
Yeah.
But I thought it would have made absolutely no difference. Like, so
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I also thought Donnarumma, the penalty against Lens was a clear-cut penalty, and apparently I don't know the game according to some people. So to me, he just takes him out. I don't care if he touched this whole argument of, oh well, if he touched the ball first, that rule went out in 1995. Like it's not a rule anymore. Like it's the same with handball, you know, oh, it's hand to ball. That's not a rule. It's just not a rule anymore. If it hits your hand, it's handball. End of story. Like
Yeah,
it's
but pundits all the time are saying, you know, when it
yeah.
suits
Yeah,
Liverpool, because
absolutely.
most of the pundits are ex-Liverpool players.
Yeah.
Oh, he got the ball first, therefore it's not a foul.
Therefore, exactly. Yeah. It doesn't matter if you literally wipe out his the player and his extended family. If he got the ball first, it's fine. Anyway, let's move on. I'm sorry, Jez, but we are gonna have to go here. Brest 4, Metz 3. I'll spare you for a second on this one. We'll have to look at the bottom of the table in a minute, but focus on Brest first of all. Phil, we're probably gonna have Brest in the Champions League. I mean, if we'd have said that even 4 months ago, I think we were all saying it, well, at Christmas, well, you know, they've had a great season, it's been lovely, but they are probably gonna drift down the table. They're not going away, are they? This probably could have been more comfortable when they were 3-1 up, 4-1 up, I should say, but Mets, to their credit, pulled two late goals back and could easily have taken something from it. But the Pirates sail on. They are second. They're a point clear of third. I mean, whatever happens, they're probably going to get in. Well, they are going to get into Europe. But Champions League, Brest, I mean, it's an amazing experience, it's an amazing achievement. And it's very, it sort of reminds me a lot of what Lens did last season, doesn't it? It's an amazing achievement for what they've done. That's to you, Phil. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
That's all
So
right.
I was, you know, because I know Jez is suffering from this. But what happened here was obviously Metz went ahead and then Brest scored four goals. And then there was very nearly a massive comeback from Metz with two goals from Mkhitaryan. Later, he's going to be at Euros, isn't he? Because Georgia, he's
They qualify.
Georgian, right?
Yep. Yeah, with
Georgia
his
have
Willy
qualified for the
Sanyol.
first time,
Willy Sanyo.
and
French
so
coach.
Mkhitaryan I'm guessing won't be with Mess next season. Bit awkward, but after another 7-goal thriller last week, at least the margin was lower this time. I mean, it's awkward, but it was better.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brest are doing so well. And I saw on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, somebody saying, has anybody written about Brest's manager? Because I can't find anything, and they seem to be doing really well. And it's like,
Not
ah.
looking very hard, are they?
Well,
I'm sure Eric Waugh thanks them for that.
but I look stuff up and I couldn't find anything on Keep or Athletic, or it was just it's odd that someone seems to have come out of nowhere to a certain extent and be doing this well.
Probably hasn't got the credit. Well, the credit, I don't know. Maybe credit is the wrong word, but I feel like he should have got a bit more credit than he's got, because what he has done is nuts in terms of, if you look at the budgets and the squad that Brest have got. Yeah, there's a few decent players, but none that you would sort of say would have been on the radars of quote unquote bigger clubs, even in France, let alone anywhere else. And yet they've gone on this incredible run, and fair play to them. It does unfortunately open another side of the debate, though, Jez. I feel much the same as you, but obviously, we're Lorient is still just about afloat. I mean, where do you feel after this? Like, is it that fight back give you that little bit of hope that it isn't all? I mean, it isn't all done and dusted, of course. There's games to go, but that does show fight. That does show a bit of determination, and there's still character in this Met side. And when all said and done, it is only a win to that playoff place right now, and you had those two wins against Nantes and Clermont, wasn't it, a few weeks back? Are the fires still burning, or are you still kind of in that it's done phase?
The frustrating thing is that there was a period when we were defending very well but couldn't score, and now we're scoring but we can't defend anymore. So, last week we had a sort of mini comeback against Monaco but conceded five. This week, more of a comeback, but Brest almost certainly took their foot off the pedal once they had a comfortable lead. And if you look at Brest's goals, I mean, I'm not saying they don't have. Even in that match, they didn't play good football. They do, and they did. But the goals are all, crosses that defenders just couldn't do the basics in terms of clearing or marking or whatever. So, as I've said before, I just don't think Metz have the quality anyway. And then they've sort of burnt, I think, all their chances. The matches they've got left at home to Lens. Okay, Lens aren't in the best of form, and Metz somehow stole a win in the away fixture. But Lens are, have got lots of previous of ruining everything for Metz. Away to Le Havre, which I suppose in theory is winnable, but then they've got Lille, Rennes, away to Strasbourg in the derby, and then last match of the season at home to PSG, for which sort of everything I said earlier, maybe I should be hoping that PSG do throw that one as well or something. But I think Metz didn't get the points that they should have done in the matches. They should have hoped to get points in, and so now really I think they're more reliant on others, because I can't really, I can't see them getting. I could see them losing all their remaining matches basically, and if they were, say, to somehow get a win at Le Havre and maybe 1 point somewhere else, I still would expect all of those above them to grab a point or two here and there that they need to stay ahead of them.
kind of feel similarly with Lorient, who unfortunately went down this weekend to your charges, Phil, a 2-0 win for Montpellier, which probably, I say probably because you never know, but it gives them a cushion now. Montpellier 32 points. That's what's that, 6 points clear now of the relegation playoff spots? You think
Oh,
one
I
more win?
think we're still nervous.
Oh yeah, there's still another couple of wins needed, but
Various public comments from Desac and the president, Laurent Nicolas, are not what you want to hear as a fan,
don't.
frankly. And I think also because it started so well for Moussa Tamari and Acre Adams. At the weekend, Tamari is not good. Acre Adams has been injured. So it's basically Tejji Devaney dragging this team by the scruff of the neck. I don't care what you think, mate. I'm taking you with me. If anything happens to him, I think the screw.
I
He's
know I
really.
say it every season, but one year I will do a thesis on Montpellier first half of the seasons versus second half of the seasons.
It's quite the switch, isn't it? And fair play, as much as this one was not good and Lorient deserve nothing, they were poor. But
If it
Tejji
goes to the
Devaney's.
last match of the season, Metz have got PSG and Lorient at home to Clermont, so.
Don't take anything for granted, but yeah, I take your point. But yeah, fair play, Tejji Savanier is stepping up once again. The only other club I wanted to mention, there's a couple of nil-nils in this weekend's games, which we're not going to talk about because why would we? But Nice Reims 0-0 and Toulouse Strasbourg 0-0, probably a result that suits both. But Nantes, in a behind closed doors, reminiscent of COVID times, they lost to Lyon 3-1. They 1-0 up, and I thought were pretty comfortable in this game, to be fair. They seemed to be doing everything right, and then they just absolutely fell apart in the second half. And the Lyon charge up the table continues, which I don't think you'd have for say I don't think you would have seen coming. Jez, are we roping Nantes into the falling through the floor sort of esque team again? Like I know we technically are because their points says that they're down there, but of the two teams on 28 points, those being Lave and Nantes, are Nantes still sort of that team that you would be slightly concerned about? I'm maybe not concerned about, neither of us are, but you get my drift.
Because they shouldn't be down there.
No, exactly my point.
But I agree. I thought they were slightly unlucky. I mean, next week is Le Havre against Nantes.
Yeah, just
So
noticed that. That's quite
that's
a
a bit of a
biggie.
biggie. And they've got quite a few, I don't know about derbies, but Nantes-Rennes is obviously a big derby. Brest Nantes, you can argue, is as well. So they've got certainly their last three matches, Brest, Lille, Monaco. That's a tough run in. Again, I just think they'll probably get enough points from those matches, allied to teams below them not getting the necessary points, that they might just about be okay. And Kombouaré's done it before. He did it last week. They were, I thought, a tad unlucky against Lyon. I think Abelin is one of those players that sort of can get you those crucial goals when needed. And they've got enough players there that can and should turn it on. And that's why I think everything there is a bit of a disappointment. And everything we've said, it's issues around the club. It's not just the quality of the players on the pitch, which is the issue. So I could definitely still see them going down, or at least, being in that playoff spot, which I think they were a couple of years ago. But I expect them to be okay. Not necessarily because they'll overtake anyone above them, though.
Because everybody else
But the
is.
loser next week, I think, will, between Havre and Nantes, will start feeling very nervous.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's between those clubs now, and I sort of feel like one of Toulouse, Montpellier, or Strasbourg is still not 100% clear, but I'm not prepared to say who of the three, just because you just never know. So yeah, that does actually quite nicely lead us into the fixtures that are upcoming at the weekend. And you're absolutely right, Jess, that is the big game, isn't it? Is that Love Nantes game, which is to that's the midday game, isn't it, on the Sunday? Yes, the midday game on the Sunday. On the 12th, which is that Friday night? It is the Friday night, isn't it? Yes. Is it? Yes.
Yeah.
The 12th. Metz against Lens. So obviously it's a home tie for Metz, so keeping everything crossed that you can get a result there. Although maybe not from my perspective. Strasbourg against Reims is the 4 p.m. game on the Saturday, followed by Rennes against Toulouse, which again, as I say, if Toulouse were to lose that, if you pardon the pun, then maybe that drags them back in. Hello of Nantes, as I said, on the Sunday. Clermont Montpellier, probably a bigger game for Montpellier in the long run, because I think any win or point from that probably sees Montpellier safe. And Lyon against Brest is the evening game. Limited fixtures this weekend due to the European games, I'm assuming. I haven't actually looked that up, but I'm assuming that's the reason why, because you'll notice that there's no Lille, no Marseille, and no PSG games in those, so they will
They
be.
agreed to give them the weekend off so they can sort of fully prepare.
So that's on the Wednesday, the 24th.
24th, yeah, I'm just looking at them now. Lorient PSG, that'll be a nice easy one for us. Monaco Lille, pretty big one for Europe, and Marseille Nice, equally so, to be fair. So yeah, 2 weeks' time, those games will be caught up in the midweek. So PSG Lyon in a couple of weeks as well. Interesting. Well, just before we go, I did want to just really quickly touch on Ligue 2, because we haven't for a couple of weeks. It's getting quite spicy down there. I don't know if either of you have had a look at what's going on, but some quite big names are pushing up that table. One of them being an outfit in green known as Saint-Étienne, who are probably not going to make it to top spots. It looks like Auxerre are going to take the title, 61 points, and they are 7 points clear of Saint-Étienne, who are now up into second. TOMS Angers have slipped to third, and then there's a 5 point gap to Laval and Rodez, who are in fourth and fifth in the table. And then you've got Paris FC, Cannes, Guingamp, and Pau down to ninth. And then down at the bottom, remember Valenciennes? Yeah. 17 points. They are going down to the regional national leagues because they are bottom and they are going out. Quevilly-Rouen are looking doomed as well, 29 points. Concarneau, 33 points. And Troyes, remember old Ligue 1 Troyes? They are also in the bottom four, 35 points. Annecy and Annecy, sorry, and Bastia. Remember Bastia? They're still down there as well, 15th place. They could be staring down the barrel. And of course, we have to
Well,
mention
just to
Bordeaux.
say, for in the case of Troyes, they're obviously one of those teams that have been completely fucked by
Yeah.
these multi-club model things.
Ripped apart from the seams outwards. Yeah,
Well, they've got a
whereas
player,
on
they've
Bo
got a
Bastia.
player on their books that has been tearing it up for Girona this year, who I think has now been signed by Man City. So
It's the winger,
they've
isn't it?
signed him from Troyes. Well, probably get no actual money for it, and he's never played for them.
Makes a bit of a
It
mockery of.
all stinks a bit.
Yeah. Should say actually, Annecy are on a four-game winning streak, so they've pulled themselves right out of trouble. We have to give Bordeaux a customary glance as well. 12th. 12th in Ligue 2. That is quite the fall, isn't it, for a club of so much history and everything that goes with it. But we may get Saint-Étienne back, and it'd certainly be nice to see Auxerre back as well, if indeed it is them who return as champions. So we shall see. Right, I think that will do us for this week. I feel
Well,
like
just
we've.
one tiny thing. The women's Euro qualification, France are in the group of death,
Yes.
and they did win 1-0 against Ireland with an early goal from Marie-Antoinette Cadoto. But that should have been much easier. They're playing Sweden tonight, and England is the other team in that group. So
Playing Sweden
This
at the
is
moment.
the, yeah, this is looking slightly problematic for the French as they go into this qualification round.
Does only one team go through?
No, it's the top two.
Two, yeah. I
I
think.
think possibly it's one of those best third place situations, but that's basically it's a problem because France, Sweden, and England are all good teams, and Ireland can fuck some people up if they concentrate.
Because
So, yeah.
England drew with Sweden, didn't they? Which I think reading
Yes.
the your local press here apparently was a bit of a they didn't expect to draw that game. English being arrogant, who'd have
Sweden
thought?
are really good. They have really good players.
I thought the same. I've always thought they were a decent side.
Tense group of death.
I'm just looking at it now. So you've got four groups of four. And yeah, it looks to me like it is top two plus best of third by the looks of it. And currently, as Jez quite rightly says, they are nil nil, Sweden and France, 38 minutes
Yeah.
gone. So yeah, we will know the outcome of that one next week. But yeah, good stuff. But France currently, at least, are 4 points. If everything was to stay the same, would be top of that group. So can but hope. Excellent. Yeah, I think that will do us for now. As the sound effect of a goal goes in, I don't know who scored it, so don't ask me. It wasn't France or Sweden, I can tell you that much. But yes, very happy birthday to the three daughters of Antoine Griezmann, who, if anyone doesn't know, were all born on exactly the same day. I'm sure he had quite a busy. Was it the 7th? I think it's the 7th. I'm sure he had a very busy day ahead of Atletico's game in the Champions League this week. So happy birthday to them. And we will be back next week, and we will go over those key games, especially that Lens-Nantes game. So tune in for that. Keep your faith, Jez. I'll try and do the same. And Phil, yeah, Montpellier will be fine. It'll all be fine. But thank you
I
very much to you both.
fucking hope so.
I
Thanks.
suspect one or. If not one, maybe two of us will not have a team in Liga next season, but we've just got to keep the faith. That's all we can do. Phil, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank
Jess, thank you very much.
you.
And we shall be back next week, where hopefully, at least in the UK, at least, it might not be so bloody windy. Sick of it. Bring on summer. Anyway, until next week, whichever game you're watching, enjoy your French football, and we'll speak to you very soon.